Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends. It's me.
Brian Brushwood.
I live. I exist.
And our show is produced by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
You will probably get the flu from listening to the show, just so you know.
Man, get
Some
your
of
shots,
us already
people.
Did.
Yeah. Get your shots, people. It's not too late. If you have not experienced the flu, even though you've heard that this year's flu thing is sideways and not perfect for the flu, better to have it than not have it, because my kids, my wife, all one day six. Me didn't get a shot. It was a lost week. We call it the lost week.
Yeah, man, and the fevers. That's how I knew I had the flu. I'm like, I feel a little achy. And then I'm like that point where like I'm trying to sleep and like I have the dream that just sort of loops over and over and over again.
Like I had one of those dreams. It was about mining. They were like, we got to mine that Bitcoin. But I was in like Tron World, and it was apparently mining a Bitcoin is riding a roller coaster in Tron World. And so I would just do that. And then I'd wake up and then I'd fall back asleep. And it's like, we got to mine that Bitcoin.
It's like your brain's like, I know you like new random dreams. I'm not feeling so good. I'm just gonna put the old VHS tape in the tape player kids and just have you watch that one.
Yeah.
Talk about a new week for weird news. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I have so many effing stories. I got a month's worth of stories here and I'm going to have to pick and choose.
Okay, go.
Well, first story, big story, February 6th.
Oh, yeah, we got a date for the Falcon Heavy, right?
Yep, it's been confirmed by Elon Musk. Falcon Heavy, the largest operational rocket on the planet, basically the most powerful rocket since the Saturn V, not including some Russian things that went a little splody, is set. The planned date is February 6th from Cape Canaveral. They're going to try to launch this thing into the sky. Three Falcon 9s strapped together. And what's going to happen is the rocket's going to take off. The side boosters are going to detach, land back at the Cape if all things go according to plan. Main rocket, payload is going to keep going, and then they're going to separate that. And then that core is going to land on a barge. All at once, folks, next week. That is the most impressive show in space you could possibly imagine. It could blow up, too. We don't know. It's never been tried before. It's a very, very risky proposition. Elon Musk has gone on the record as saying that, like, hey, come show up. You'll see something. And I'm going to be there. And I already set up a little email list. If anybody's interested, if you go to andrewmain.com/space, you can sign up. I'm trying to put together a little get-together for anybody who's interested in showing up and doing that. I'd like to see if these guys want to do it. That'd be kind of great. And everybody's recovering from the flu and stuff, but
well, my original plan was to have a better schedule than I have. but absent that, I think I have enough airline miles that I could do everything last minute. So my decision will be very last minute based on the probability of it going on that date, because these things get pushed back all the time, right?
Yeah, sure. They get pushed back all the time. Sometimes you don't know until day of if it's going to get pushed back or day before it gets pushed back. So the tentative plan is they say February 6th, and then the pushback date, if that they don't hit that day, would be the 7th. So unless there's a major thing, you know, between now and the next few days that makes them think like, you know, oh, yeah, no, we have to push this back a week or so. If I were anybody else, I would kind of plan on showing up. And because, I mean, like what I want to do, I'm going to show up. They don't do the rocket. I'd love to meet some people, love to hang out. And that's sort of my plan is like, either way, you know, it'll be fun.
So last time I ever got close to something like this was I was trying, back when I was doing Halloween Horror Nights in 2010, That was the last shuttle mission of that era, and I wanted to try to go do it, but then they pushed it back, and so I wasn't in the area during the time it happened. There's kind of a poetry to the fact that I couldn't make it to the last of a dying form of space travel, and now here we are 8 years later, and I could be there for the dawn of a new form of space travel, which I think would be, I don't know, like if I could pick the two, I'd rather be there for this one.
We went up before and it was great, like for to watch SpaceX launch.
It's exciting. It's always exciting, you know, to see these things. You know, I've been to, I don't know how many launches. I have to think about how many SpaceX launches I've been to, and I've been to, you know, multiple rocket launches. I've actually stood on, you know, the NASA Causeway, you know, the one inside there, like, which is amazing. Watched a Delta launch, which was, you know, fantastic. And part of the fun of it is the atmosphere. And each time I go, it would get bigger and bigger and bigger. When Justin and I went to him in Florida, you know, we'd go to the park there. There are a lot of people there, a lot of people gathered around. When I went to the last one, one of the last ones I went to out here at Vandenberg, it's harder to see it. There's not as many places. We went to this road that's right on the edge of the base, and it was cars for miles. And it was a fun concert-like, you know, atmosphere. You know, I got a bunch of friends to show up. We had a, you know, there's a photo, I think, somewhere on my Instagram of me and a bunch of friends holding up the SpaceX flag. It was just a great, great time. It was just a lot of fun. And just you hang out with all these other people who love space, are excited about the future. This Falcon Heavy launch, I think it's going to rival Space Shuttle launch as far as the number of people that show up.
Yeah. You know, I think. Well, and plus also, here's the crazy part of it is if you're rolling the dice, there are the most vectors for exciting disasters across the board. Like, if this blows up, it'll be one of the biggest rocket blowing up experiences of all time. If, let's say it's successful, now you still have the secondary drama of, like, do the two attached first stages land appropriately? Does one of them land and the other one blow up? You know, and then even then you have the third initial stage. I don't know how to describe them at this point. I mean, I know that they're all the same engine, basically, right?
Yeah, first stages. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
But the third first stage is just a weird thing to say.
The third booster?
But, yeah. Yeah, third booster, right. I don't know. This is going to be like, you're going to get lots of adrenaline rushes during it. You're going to have a lot of moments where stuff could go wrong or go really, really right.
I think to Andrew's point, there is just kind of a gathering excitement for this kind of stuff. I mean, when we first saw the SpaceX launch, you know, so many years ago, you know, it was maybe, you know, a few locals and some fans, but like, the idea of a bunch of chuckleheads, you know, driving up, you know, hours and hours from South Florida to come see it. Like, I don't know exactly how many of us there were per se, but for this, you know, I think this is not a curiosity anymore. I mean, this is a big gigantic step forward. This is a huge monumental moment in history, whether or not it happens next week or another time.
So in the chat room, Taz the Man has a really good question. We should all stake our claims on exact predictions for the outcome, knowing that none of us have any way of knowing. I think we should place a $5 bet on how everything goes.
100% success.
Yeah?
Possible push to the seventh.
Okay. Wow.
But I mean, if we're betting on it, like that means that we're like investigating what the weather is supposed to be on the 6th and 7th in Cape Canaveral, right?
Hey, has there been a recovery of the first stage failure since they started landing them on barges? Like once they hit it on the barge, they pretty much got it licked.
No, I don't think they've had after. Yeah, I don't think believe so.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, so I'm going to say.
So, all right. According to the Weather Channel, we are looking at Tuesday, February 6th, cloudy, high of 69, low of 59, with a 20% chance of rain. And Wednesday is PM showers, 60 to 70, high of 70, low of 60. So for whatever that factors into our
big-ass
betting for whether or not this is going to get pushed.
Well, at this point, I wouldn't think it would be because of weather. I think it'd be because of the likelihood of, hey, what's this part? Oh, man.
okay.
That goes in there.
I'm going to make a very specific prediction. It will launch just fine. One of the two stages will be unrecoverable, but not for a catastrophic blowing up reason. It'll be some reason that we hadn't seen before. Like it landed in a gold
Goblet
miner's
or something like
it landed in a gold miner's claim and he
in
won't
Florida?
Give it up.
dear Lord. Now, you know, that is the worst possible outcome that can happen.
Yes.
If it blows up, it's fine. But if one of those things landed back on land where outside of the base where it's not supposed to, because its guidance system, that's horrifying, Brian.
Yeah, I know.
That's the end of SpaceX.
I'm going to stick with
it. Brian is predicting the end of SpaceX, everybody.
I'm going to stick with it.
That's it. The entire company gone in one horrifying situation where a dog is dead because of a rocket coming down in some poor young girl's lawn.
Hey, man, I know it's a long shot. That's where the money's made.
It's like I know that literally we spend at least 30 minutes a week on this show talking about one company, but I'm betting $5 on the fact that it will all be gone by next week. And I'm going to win that $5, goddammit. I don't have any, to me, the only two predictions that you could possibly make are that it would succeed or it would be pushed, right? Like, they already did the static fire. That's been done, right?
Yeah, they did the static fire. That was really awesome.
Nodding yes on the audio podcast.
It was rhetorical. Sorry. so they did the static. That was a success. You know, we'll see. I mean, they don't want to take any chances here, but my prediction is 100% successful outcome, and that's my hope too for the future of humanity.
And that is certainly my hope as well. But you know, if we're making a game of
but this Abe Lincoln speaks otherwise.
We're watching the footage of the static fire and the big plume cloud.
This was January 24. So 5 days ago.
Wow.
So one of the ways you keep track of this to find out what's going to happen is if you go to Reddit, the Reddit SpaceX forum is pretty good. And if you're curious, if you want to go down there and you want to make sure that you're going to get someplace to see, Kennedy Space Center still has ticket packages available. Now, they had a Falcon Heavy Feel the Heat package, which was going to be like a really cool, and that sold out. The closest package is sold out, but they still have the Falcon Heavy Closer package, which includes admission to the Kennedy Space Center, which is pretty cool. And that's $75 a ticket. If you just want to go see it close and know that you're going to have a spot to see it, for $35, you can get the Falcon Heavy Close ticket, which allows you to see it from there. They have an area to watch that from, and they'll have a Jumbotron with a live feed and all that, and you know, communicators doing that. I bought a ticket for the package they have, which is the closer package, which is going to be in the Rocket Garden, which sounds cool.
I didn't think about the need to buy tickets. That sort of screws up my last minute decision thing.
No. Well, hold on. So I got tickets just in case nobody else shows up and I'm there by myself, because I've talked to my two best friends. I won't name them. And they're all kind of like, we talk about it for years. And I'm like, all right, if I go there and I'm by myself, then I'll go to the Rocket Garden. But if I go there, I got a hotel room right by Jetty Park. Jetty Park's where I want to go watch it with. It's where I want to watch it with everybody listening here. So my plan is, if nobody shows up, then I'm not going to be standing there by myself. You know, I'll just go over to the Kennedy Space Center and watch it.
Right on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know.
Hey, so what's the name of that New Zealand rocket company? Those young upstarts.
Oh, yeah. So the rocket is the Electron. The rocket company is let me get the name of that again, because we've talked about them before. Electron Rocket and
Rocket Lab USA.
That'd be
Rocket
weird.
Lab, because they're a New Zealand company. It's Rocket Lab. Yeah. Yeah, and so they have, yeah, because it's funny, I know more about the rocket itself, the Rutherford engine. It's an electric pump that pumps the fuel into it. Very, very clever. So these guys have been working for years on a much, much smaller rocket that they can lower the cost per launch. It won't be a lower cost per pound to orbit, but the idea is instead of having to spend $60 million, you could spend a few million dollars to launch a payload in there, and they've designed to be able to handle things like CubeSat-sized payloads, et cetera. This was a market that originally the Falcon 1 was going to go into, but they didn't find much of a market. And so SpaceX, like, fine, we'll just build the most awesome rocket ever. But now that CubeSats have become much bigger, there's a lot more opportunity for that. So they say that the cost per launch is, like, less than $6 million. We're currently, you know, a SpaceX launch. Official launch price, I think, is maybe 60 or so. I think with used boosters, it's gone down a bit. But anyhow, you know, it's a very practical way to be able to launch things in there. If you can't, you know, get on board a much larger pay, you know, your payload, you know, potentials are really cool. So they built a really cool rocket. They spent a lot of time developing their own engine. That's my theory. If you want to have a rocket company, you got to build your own engines. You got to build your own engines, you know. Yeah. They built their own engine, and after a long, long waiting game of, we think we're launching, no or not. We tried to do it, didn't work. Tried again, didn't work it. You know, now finally they got it going. And again, that's the nature of the business. And every time we criticize SpaceX for delay, it's like, yes, and how's the James Webb Space Telescope going with NASA?
Yeah. You know? I mean, how amazing is it also that SpaceX, the like basement shatterer of pricing for getting things into space, is now the like, you know, mid-tier, you know, the target brand, right? Like, and now there's an even lower, like, you know, hey, no, we can get it even cheaper, you know, if you can get on a SpaceX.
I mean, they can't get it cheap. I mean, they can't get it per pound cheaper. You know, they can launch a rocket cheaper, which, you know, so can India and some, you know, and some other countries can kind of do that too. But they can just, you know, the idea is that the whole launch cost, you could buy out a launch for $6 million as opposed to $60 million. So
yeah,
it's not a more efficient system, but it is a lower cost.
No. I think, yeah, I'm just trying to talk about the price tag. Let me ask you, just go back to SpaceX real quick. Obviously, the big story 2 weeks ago was the question on whether or not they had lost or a secret satellite had been lost. And the question was, the guidance that we talked about was, well, watch what happens with SpaceX going forward to see if things are delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Does the fact that this Falcon Heavy launch seems to be happening about on schedule bolster the argument that, yeah, the secret satellite is going to be leaked, that it was, you know, destroyed, but it could indeed be out there?
Well, the big question was, there seems to be a lot of people think that something happened to the satellite, but whose fault was it? And there was a tremendous amount of blame. You would read headlines like, SpaceX's latest failure implies this. And people are like, we don't know, they failed. And why didn't you say Northrop Grumman? Like, well, nobody knows who they are. Like, so it's a misleading headline. You could put Northrop Grumman's, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, Austin man Brian Brushwood murder investigation. Well, Brian didn't murder anybody. Yeah, but he lives in Austin, and nobody knows who the other guy is.
Right.
You know, and it affects him. Brian could have been a victim. You know, it's that, I hated that logic. It was just like, no, you put SpaceX and failure in there because there's a vested effort by people to, you know, who are very directly affected by SpaceX's pricing, et cetera. So, yeah, now we've had, there's been other launch stuff put on the manifest, you know, put on like, hey, we're going to be doing these government launches. There has been no change to their certification rating. There has been no evidence that there's any big investigation or anything into it. You know, and there have been, you know, closed door conversations and stuff. And yeah, seems that, like, yeah, SpaceX did what they're supposed to do, and there was some other problem either with the hardware Northrop Grumman made, you know, either the whatever it used to for the second stage, the satellite, or actually it worked and we don't know. But I think that you just don't see, you know, the people writing the sort of the scare pieces or the anti-SpaceX pieces sort of backtracking on that, because the purpose wasn't to inform.
So I guess the one thing that we can say is that there does not seem to be, like, there's any evidence to say that the government is punishing SpaceX for screwing something up.
No, because they haven't shipped any launches. Nothing's been changed. No, you know, they have a government satellite launch scheduled for tomorrow, okay, which you would think that, you know, that would be kind of an issue. So this is for Luxembourg, and this is going to be a Canaveral launch, which is, if there was a problem, they would not be doing that. So
yeah, well, that's good. I mean, it's what we ask folks to keep an eye out on. So I'm definitely curious to see, you know, if there's anything past that. But I mean, it seems to be that at the very least, it was the government looks at that as a Northrop Grumman issue and not necessarily any problem with the booster that got it up as high as it did.
Yeah. So back to Rocket Lab and Electron. So they've been trying for several years to finally launch this rocket, which is another great thing to have in the arsenal, because when you can spend $6 million for a launch, you know, as Justin's pointed out, the price opportunities are great. $6 million for a launch to put, you know, some stuff up there, satellites, et cetera, whatever, there might be a growing market for that. And it's a great achievement. And, you know, Rocket Lab, here you're this company struggling for several years to make this thing happen. You've got some really great engineering going into it. And you kind of want to celebrate it. You kind of want to let people know that, hey, we're open for business. Space is open for business. You could put something in space. So let's let people know that.
It seems like it would be, to my mind, a responsibly splashy PR thing to throw something up in orbit that maybe people can see for just a few months. And then it'll fall down, and I'm sure it will be totally uncontroversial, and you know, maybe be a fun thing that you could take your kids in the backyard and say, "Hey, there it is. That's the world changing before our eyes, kids. You see that flashing light? That's the Humanity Star."
So what they did was they basically launched their payload to get into orbit was a disco ball, basically a giant disco ball. With these mirror facets.
By the way, PR tip, if you want people to not call it a disco ball, don't in your PR release say, whatever you do, guys, don't call it a disco ball. It's a Humanity Star, all right? I know, here's a picture of me standing what next looks like to a giant disco ball, but it's not a disco ball. Don't call it a disco ball.
Humanity Star, Stu, don't do that. They launched this ball, looks like, you know, the world's largest D&D dice. And what happens is it's in orbit. It's in an orbit that'll last for, I think, like 9 months or something like that. It's going to fall. It's one of these things. They put these things, a lot of objects like that, a lot of CubeSats, things like that, you put into orbits that you know will decay, so it's not going to stay up there forever, okay? So the thing spins around, you know, 90 minutes, you know, around the Earth, and then once it gets to a certain point, if you look like right, you know, at dawn and dusk, you'll see like a little bright streak. If you look in the right spot, you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. And the website does a really good job of sort of sketching it out of where it is at any time. And it's fun to watch it travel in real time. If you go to thehumanitystar.com, they've got the orbital trajectory, and they only have it highlighted for when it's in daylight hours and visible. This is, of course, when you want to see it is in that twilight evening, so you can catch the reflection of the sun off of it. But man, getting a little backlash from this. Some astronomers calling it space graffiti.
Yeah, and there's been a bit of outrage. There's been a backlash against him because people are complaining about, you know, that, you know, when you're doing some observation, you're looking through your telescope or using some space, you know, your telescope system to sort of do observations on parts of the sky, you're going to get this flash. Now, here's the thing. And like, there is so much outrage. And a lot of it's from people who, I don't know anything about space. Let me, I don't think of space or astronomy or whatever, but I saw a lot of sort of outrage and stuff, you know, about some of this stuff on Twitter and all this, like, another satellite to interfere with this. And like, look at this streak across the Hubble Space Telescope, you know, and they're like, oh man, like, you know, that would suck. But, this is below the Hubble telescope, so you wouldn't see that. That's actually looking at a thing in a geostationary orbit, or that's a satellite in a much further out orbit. You know, I'm like, So yeah, satellites can cause streaks and things like this. So the points at which this is going to be causing the flashes, as far as I know, are not necessarily peak viewing times. And I'm sure there's the possibility it could. And people are like, oh, no, that, this could be a problem. Here's a slide from 4 years ago when something streaked across, you know, my band of the sky I was looking at. It's like, all right, let me get this straight. We got a company now that's lowered the cost of launching stuff into space to $6 million per mission, which means they're going to make possible, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of CubeSat satellite tech pieces of technology. They've advanced the art of space exploration considerably. They put a thing up there that maybe somewhere some astronomer, you know, working on their thesis is going to be frustrated by. And it's an outrage. You know, it's pollution. It's, oh, it's putting strobe lights on polar bears. One, effing cool, baller, if you want to do that. Two, no, it's not.
It seems to me that everybody's outraged about not what is actually done, but what they are afraid might be a worse version in the future because of that.
The troubling precedent that this sets. Yeah. Listen, explain to me, anybody who's upset about this, how this does worse for our relationship with space than Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, but precisely.
Like, I mean, come on. Look, at best, it's a reason, like you said, Brian, you have three young girls and you like to go take them out in the back with your telescopes and show them the story of the stars, right?
Yep.
Here's an element where you can say, hey, look, you, a human, can affect the night sky. This is somebody who has put his time and effort into creating a company so we can interact with space on a level that we have never before. And as, you know, slice up the motivation however you want between, you know, a daring stunt or hubris or ego satisfaction. But that's there. Somebody did that. A human did that, and now we are looking at it. If we want to get back into this, like, you know, like we stop dreaming argument, here's a sign that we can affect the cosmos. This is tangible evidence that you can do it. And now there's a million better ways to illustrate that, and you can then have this as an entry point to get there, much in the way that science fiction brings us as a gateway drug to talk about actual science. But beyond that, I mean, who cares? I mean, aside from a bunch of whinging, I try not to get to this level, but shut up, nerds.
I think that kind of comes back to, too, that, like, it's a territorial thing. There is this sort of attitude that, well, space is for astronomers and NASA astronauts. Space is for these people who, you know, are part of, you know, formal academia, part of NASA. This is who space is for, and this is our domain. And I'm going to make another argument, which is that in launching this, Rocket Lab has made, you know, reached prominence. Tons of people know who they are. A lot of corporate companies are, you know, more aware. Yeah, they did it. They succeeded. It was operationally, I think, probably a very smart move for them as far as commercial clients, whatsoever. They know that. It means that we're going to get more payloads and satellites and stuff. One communication satellite is worth far more than everything the Hubble has ever done, in my opinion. I love the Hubble. The Hubble is an amazing thing. What we're learning about our universe is incredible. But if I have to put a value on providing telecom to countries that have no, you know, we're unable to, you know, reach out to other parts of the world, you know, efficiently or cheaply or whatever, I'm gonna side with that. You know, when you hear about, like, you know, it's like, you know, some of these smaller countries now that are getting their own satellite systems, things like this, TISAT, places like this. It's exciting, and that means more to me. I personally don't benefit from that indirectly, but I get a lot more enjoyment out of looking at space imagery, things like this. But, you know, for me to say, I really need more, you know, my photos of the Horseshoe Nebula are more important than you guys having low-cost telecom.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like NIMBYism on a global scale. It's just like, yeah, you're celebrating your triumph the wrong way. You should be stoically nodding and sagely looking at data, not shooting off fireworks. Knock it off.
Yeah, I hats off to Rocket Lab. I mean, hats off to them. Yes, I absolutely do believe that we're going to get some evidence, and we're going to get people trying to make a case too. You're going to see some photos. Oh, I was doing this and the streaking. It's like, yeah, you know, there are there are actually, you know, people like, oh, like I this showed up. I'm like, you know, there are databases that tell you what satellites are crossing your path. Just saying. And if you want to look at the history of really stupid stuff that's done, like, you know, the Russians throwing an entire spacecraft outside of the, you know, spacecraft with the, you know, as a spacesuit stat. There's a ton of stuff we've done, you know, and we do a lot of these things. And, you know, I love going out to the desert and watching every now and then, looking for the path of a satellite or something and seeing that little flash. Little flash, that little thing going, that's pretty cool.
Look, to be honest, if I could, I would love to walk out and have the night sky be filled with artificial satellites that I could see blinking and bleep blopping all over the place. I want the sky to look like Coruscant. I want it to be so busy. And then, yeah, it's like, oh, astronomy becomes more complicated. Look, at that point, it's cheap as hell to throw a billion space telescopes up. We're gonna... In 50 years, I'm making all of this up, have an array of telescopes that are the entire orbit of the Earth around the sun, that we're able to do deep probing from all over the place. It's like the light pollution ruining astronomy argument holds less water these days. As a certain best-selling author once told me, if what you want is no light pollution, North Korea is like the best place for astronomy then.
Rocket Lab is going to end up doing far more for astronomy than this, the negative impact. And I'm sure there will be, there's somebody's going to like, hey, I saw this thing interfere. Like, and, but then, like, we talk about the precedent. Well, what happens if companies want to advertise in space? We'll yell at them.
Yeah. That's the way it should be.
It'll be bad publicity if Subway wants to let you know that the $5 footlong is available for 9 months by putting up a green-ass satellite, then everyone will be upset about it. And they'll yell at them, and we will prove that this is a bad way for you to advertise. They should have spent that money on Facebook ads. Like, whatever. We are in the process of figuring this kind of stuff out. We're drawing our lines socially. But as far as, you know, this, you know, a mop-topped ragamuffin throwing up his disco ball, like, who cares? He made a company that I think will benefit humanity.
There is an entire Wikipedia on space advertising. And I remember years ago hearing about Pepsi and, like, Pepsi caused an outrage. You know, or somebody created an outrage because they were going to try to, like, you know, advertise in space. There was a company here. We have the American company Space Marketing back in 1993 promoted a 1 square kilometer illuminated billboard that'd be launched into low orbit, be visible from Earth. I have no idea how they plan on doing that. But anyhow, it's kind of been happening. But there was, like, you know, Pizza Hut's been doing, they had a pizza delivered to the International Space Station. Putting stuff on rockets and all that. But anyhow, there's been, in 1993, faced with the space billboard project, U.S. Congressman Ed Markey introduced a bill that banned all U.S. advertising in space. This bill was amended to only cover obtrusive advertising, thus allowing sponsorship deals where logos were placed on the rockets or astronauts.
That's the worst. The worst. Go ahead.
Wait, it's funny is that, here's the funny thing about that is that this guy says, we need to ban this. And they're like, yeah, you know, now we can't put an ad on an astronaut's uniform. We can't offset that. Oh, well, I guess we have to amend it. You know, you didn't think this thing through. You didn't think that it's like, that's right. They had to amend it because I'm going to ban it all. Like, oh, now we can't even do that. Oh, well, that was an unforeseen consequence.
I mean, that's 10s to be usually safe territory for legislators who want to make noise is to, ban a boogeyman that doesn't yet exist, but might be a problem.
Yeah, you know, the troubling trend that leads us to.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this kind of crass commercialization of space is disgusting, and we need to take steps toward it. In fact, if I had my druthers, the only thing that would be advertised in space is patreon.com/weirdthings. That's where you can support this show. Listen, folks, we don't take advertisements on this podcast. We bring the bargain directly to you. Give us money, and we'll keep doing the podcast each and every week. And more than that, we're going to give you an RSS feed where you're able to get early access to the After Things show. That's the show we do after Weird Things, where we talk about how to be a entrepreneur, how to solve creative problems in your own life, and be a better person. You know, that would look great on a rocket. And I don't just mean patreon.com/weirdthings. I mean a written transcript of everything I've just said. Put it in smaller and smaller font to the point where it's almost unreadable. Yes, this sentence too. And by that, I mean, yes, this sentence too twice. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
It's going to be a hell of a rocket. It's going to look great.
Somebody mock that up. I just want that on a rocket. The only advertisement allowed in space.
Last thought. Every time I hear the term light pollution, in my mind, I hear this magic, amazing gift that lifted us out of the dark ages and into the modern era. You know, light, electric light. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, dude. that's a really good point. I mean, what's funny is I say that, and yet we definitely moved way outside of town just so that we could see the stars. And we've watched light pollution reduce our ability to see everything here locally.
Sure. The alternative sucks. You know, it's
of course,
you know, like they're like, oh, no, there's all sorts of stuff you can do to reduce the amount of light that goes up. Yeah, it sounds really expensive. You know, it sounds and it's like there's things that I love. I don't think you should have to subsidize, you know, which is hard. But you know what you should be subsidizing right now?
What?
Again, totally. We're done talking about SpaceX. We're done talking about that. Let's talk about The Boring Company.
So I saw you were quick to respond. You tweeted in response to Elon Musk, who announced that they were selling a Boring Company branded flamethrower. And from the context of your tweet, it looked an awful lot like maybe you'd purchased one.
I purchased one.
There it is. I did not see this one where you definitely copied and pasted your confirmation. You bought a flamethrower?
Yeah. Why didn't you?
Because I would just get a non-branded flamethrower. I thought. I don't know. It's pretty awesome looking, though.
Elon Musk, he sold the Boring Company hats, which were... I think he made like 20,000 of or something like this. And so he did his initial hat offering, which raised, you know, like a million. I forgot how much money it raised, you know, $1 million or something like this, which was kind of brilliant. And then he made a joke about, yeah, we're going to have the Boring Company flamethrower, which is a nod to, of course, Spaceballs, where Yogurt's talking about, you know, merchandising and Spaceballs, the flamethrower. The kids are going to love it. And people are like, ha, 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 yeah, you know, flamethrower or whatever, you know. And he announced last night, hey, yeah, flamethrower's here. It's real. We're selling them. They're $500 a pop. They're totally legal. Talk to ATF. ATF says if it doesn't go past 10 feet of flames, then it's fine. You can buy flamethrowers on Amazon, too. It's not like, oh, my God, how can I sell this? They're used for burning weeds and stuff. They're, you know, tar, et cetera. Totally legal, totally legit. So they started offering pre-ordering of flamethrowers last night, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna buy one because I want to buy a Boring Company flamethrower. What more reason? I don't have to explain myself to anybody. And then here's watching video of Elon Musk rushing towards the camera with a flamethrower. And you gotta listen to the audio. Listen to the audio. There's a cackle right before the beginning. You hear this cackle. It's worth $20 billion, folks. $20 billion.
You know, our own Hank Scorpio continuing to do Hank Scorpio things.
Yep.
Elon Musk, by the way, on Twitter, was tracking. He apparently ordered 20,000 flamethrowers to be sold within a few hours. He said 1,000 were ordered. Then 2K, then 4K. At last count, 14 hours ago, he had sold 7,000 flamethrowers within 24 hours of selling them on the internet.
That's so insane. That's awesome.
So that's a thing that's happening. At $500, are you satisfied with your purchase, Andrew, so far?
Well, no, when I get it, I'll let you know. I mean, here's the thing is that, like, it's crazy, it's stupid, and that's sort of the point. But also, I'm like, yeah, it's going to go up in value. You know, it's going to become, like, you know, original nerd history. But I didn't, you know, I didn't buy it, you know, for that, you know. So, I mean, I bought it because, like, yeah, this is kind of a cool thing. This is, like, I'm a lazy man. I'm a very, very lazy person. And I look around and you look for people you say, like, hey, who's really high functioning? You know, who's really getting things done or doing stuff like that? And I look at, you know, I look at people like Jeff Bezos. You know, this is a guy that's now the richest man in the world, could have retired a long time ago. You know, Elon Musk is a guy that's bet he's gone against conventional wisdom, put everything down into companies. And other people said, no, don't do it. You know, you don't put your own money on the line. And he does it and do that. And I'm thinking, like, man, like, I like that. Support that. I think that's pretty baller.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the idea. The idea is that you are just buying a really cool souvenir for a company that theoretically could be consequential in the grand scheme of Western civilization, right?
Yeah. And there was like, you know, they had a last week, Boring Company did a presentation at Culver City to talk about their plans for extending their tunnels and whatnot. And, you know, two things happened. One is, like, they had a, you know, city council woman who made a comment like, well, I think this is, you know, path baked or this or that or whatever. You know, and it was this sort of this, her frustration was saying that, like, I don't think companies have, you know, commercial enterprises done enough to help public transportation or transportation in general. And I'm thinking you probably got there in a car, but made by, I don't know, maybe a company. But anyhow, and then somebody I knew made some comment afterwards about, I think it's, and I'm like, listen. I don't know. Digging tunnels is the right answer. I know that I don't know enough to say that it's not. And I think that somebody wanting to solve these problems and saying, hey, I'm going to put my own money on the line. Oh, and I'm going to get a bunch of idiots to buy flamethrowers to pay for this. I'll be one of those idiots. Because, like, yeah, if we can make tunnels and things like this more practical. I mean, people, it's such an unsexy thing. But you think about, so is the internet. So is a lot of other stuff. But if you have a really cheap way to increase the amount of available area in high density places and increase, you know, whatever. And I could go on and on about, you know, induced demand arguments. I'm like, I can explain why those are sort of poorly founded. But anyhow, yeah, yay. Let's do this.
If you look at the history of Elon Musk, the least explosive, I don't want to say unsuccessful, but least explosive of the companies that he has put effort into is the one that has the most mainstream understanding that this is a technology that we need to pay attention to, right? When Elon Musk with SpaceX went into the idea of private rocket, a non-entrenched player in private space travel that was looked at as very high risk at the most charitable, right? The idea of building a new American car company is something that trail has many dead bodies along it, right? Of people that spent a lot of money and were not able to create something like that. And he has done both of those. But Solar City, which is not, you know, it's a company that now, did that get acquired by Tesla?
Yeah, Solar City is now part of Tesla.
But yeah, it was one of them that, like, we all understand. I mean, it's like common orthodoxy that, you know, listen, green energy is the way to go. And so it wound up having to get folded into Tesla because Tesla was so good at making batteries.
Yeah, and had a good customer outreach and all that things. But yeah, it was a lot of.
So it's like for that. Why not? You know why? I mean, it seems as if that Elon Musk sees that the problem with stuff like Hyperloop is, you know, getting the land for it and or, you know, putting it in the exact places where you'd want it to go. How do you solve problem?
A Boring Company isn't necessarily Hyperloop. Boring Company is just, you know, tunnel technology, you know.
No, I know. I mean, but I'm saying why did he focus on tunnels, right? Like,
yeah, let's solve these problems. And it's something being done with private capital, privately done. And then, you know, it's just this, like, yeah, like if, you know, they're making assurances, they're not going to disrupt people up above and they're paying for it. And works for me, you know, so there you go.
And a flamethrower
for the chuds. That's my theory. Flames with the chuds. Gentlemen, you know what time it is.
I'm feeling it. It's got to be time for
Journey Quest.
on
Johnny Quest.
You have been tasked by the syndicate. As if you double cross us, we are going to use cruise missiles to blow up your loved ones if we know where they are. Because these would be GPS coordinates that are in a slip of paper in good Bryce's pocket.
To have this one condition met. We need good Bryce on our team.
So previously on Journey Quest, the boys were on the road as professional wrestlers. They had a literally brought the house down at their first debut performance. Genocide is not a term I would use lightly, but we do use it a lot here on Journey Quest. Genocide may have been committed. They ran into the Jerky King of West Texas, we think, who was actually supposed to be working for the syndicate. We don't know who the syndicate is yet. And he was told to offer the guys an opportunity, which was to smuggle an atomic bomb into Bryce, Vegas. And in doing this, they were promised that they could have full replicate clones of their beloved ones, you know, back. They could live the life they wanted to in this luxury community of Diamond Club Town Acres. And amazing place. And all they had to do was go kill Bryce in Bryce Vegas with this. And they were given help, which was replicant Bryce, I guess, because he's like, you know, fully flesh and blood. So a replicant good Bryce is along with them to help them out.
Yeah. We discussed the idea, you know, we're on our way out to Bryce Vegas. We don't have to just nuke them. I mean, as long as we depose, we're trying to figure out a surgical strike.
There were some pretty large promises made vis-a-vis what to do with the empty power vacuum of.
We're gonna Dave this SOB.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what's happening. The new plan is we're gonna Dave evil Bryce, because now we have our Dave. If you've never seen the movie Dave, the president's an a-hole and he like has a heart attack with a mistress, and so a presidential impersonator takes the job of the president and then falls in love with the first lady. I don't want to spoil it, but we're going to Dave him. So we have our replicant Bryce that can act like evil Bryce. We just need to kill evil Bryce.
All right, now hold on. Or maybe induce a stroke in evil Bryce. You know, maybe we could just get him to real mad so he pops his top, and then we take the body and we swap it out put good Bryce in there.
I don't know how far my back my memory banks go. Was I known for getting over the top angry?
Not in the days you would remember, good Bryce.
I see.
But apparently future you, he's a changed half man, half mech beast, all DJ, EDM, terror machine.
This is after.
Yeah.
This is after.
Okay. You know, one time he shot a missile within the vicinity of Brian, and Brian, unsolicited, reached out his arm to grab it, and his arm ripped his hand ripped right clean off.
Yeah,
all right.
That does sound like an evil thing for Bryce to have done. Yeah. Is making
that almost like a warning shot. You know, it wasn't even going to hit him. Like, he literally wanted to touch it. Like,
I fail to see the relevance of this part of the discussion.
You just said the baseline of how evil.
Hi, I'm just the guy standing on the street corner talking to y'all before you get back in your RV and, you know, go on the road to Bryce Vegas with your bomb.
I thought we were on the road already. Sorry.
No, you stopped at a post-apocalyptic gas station where you have to, you know, we won't explain what you have to pay for.
It's a very expensive set piece. We had to shoot something here. So, you know, rather than have it on the RV.
Oh, I remember a girl came through this way, broke my heart. So, was there anything that led up to the break, you know, between back when Bryce was good and Bryce was bad? Was there any, I want to say, sort of a maltreatment, maybe a Me Too moment from his employer?
Hello, random stranger. Boy.
Get in your windows here. Don't mind me.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what you're insinuating, but he does bring up a good point, Justin. Do you think, you know, maybe to help take down evil Bryce, we got to figure out what made him evil. Now, Bryce.
Okay, yes.
you're still good, Bryce.
I am, yeah.
And you have all the memories that original Bryce had, right?
I suppose so.
Is there latent trauma that you think would cause this to happen, or would you have to assume that some kind of external force would break you in a way that would cause you to become evil?
Pardon me for interrupting him, Sam. You know, I take my payment in flies, and there's many on this RV, so you guys are going to be good. But if his employer is the one doing the asking about the trauma, sometimes victims may not come forward.
Yeah,
I was a licensed therapist before the apocalypse. Just saying. Anyhow.
So, Bryce, is there anything like about like, you know, maybe your like work schedule or payment or anything like before the apocalypse that you know, maybe have left some kind of latent trauma?
I mean, my memory banks don't detect anything out of a normal background level of tension and
sure,
you know,
so simmering constant tension.
It's like your average Joe's tension.
I fix good Bryce with a steely-eyed glare and ever so slightly shake my head.
Hey, Brian, why don't you say you'll get us some squirts in the the general store over there? Right?
Yeah, sure thing. I'm gonna get a Diet Coke for me. You want anything, Justin? Are you good?
No, a couple. Give me a 6-pack of squirts.
Bryce. Is there anything you want to think about as I go in there? Anything? anything I can make sure happens?
I'm good. I don't think that I eat.
All right. Good. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm gonna go get squirts. Bye.
Okay. This guy never anyway, offers Bryce, me snacks.
All right. So Brian's gone.
Okay.
Obviously, look, you guys work together, you know, that's a...
Hey, guys,
I
got beef jerky, too. It's not human beef jerky, not like the Jerky King. Any jerky? I know you don't need to eat, Robo Bryce.
I still don't think that I eat.
Right, grab some for the road. In fact, go and double check to make sure there's not also...
He says he doesn't eat, but he's actually feeling hungry because he is made of flesh and blood.
That's right.
I'm just the guy here. Why do you tell him that he doesn't need to eat?
I just assume, but I guess you're a therapist, so you would know a thing about replicants. So
well, I see a person standing before me who I think needs to eat, but here you're trying to deprive him of food.
He said he didn't need to eat.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I don't know if I've passed the amount of existence time to feel hunger yet.
They have.
If you could get me some Lay's, in case I feel
yes,
hungry.
Yes, and I'll get you Kit Kat. It's not sake flavored, but regular Kit Kats. Okay.
Okay.
So, all right. Listen, man, we need anything that we can do. I'll tell you what, even a good memory, a bad memory, something that we can use to worm our way to bad Bryce, and then we kill him and install you in his place. And you now run an empire.
Do you want me to top off your washer fluid? And you know, a phobia might be pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, anything. Maybe some kind of traumatic memory that we can exploit.
Well, I seem to remember, I can't seem to remember much after the whole apocalypse.
Sure,
sort
yeah.
of thing. But I do remember like having a good moment right before something big was about to happen. Like we all got together in one place and we were all sharing our favorite memories of everybody, but it's still a little vague.
Hey, I'm back. Is it a funeral? Are you thinking of a funeral? Or was it a SpaceX launch?
I don't think it was. I don't think that. No, I don't remember. No, I remember it being at here in Austin. I remember it being at a home, and we were all gathered together, and we were all waiting for something big to happen. But that's
like a birthday party or something.
Maybe
or?
It was a birthday party.
We're
waiting for somebody to show up to the but you were there, and me and Brian were there.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Huh. Well, thanks for being effing useless.
You know, sometimes trauma causes you to create false memories over the real memories. Never usually this vague, but, you know, who's to say? Maybe at some other point Something will trigger. Something will happen. It'll all come back to him.
Hey, you don't happen to know hypnosis, do you? You said you're a therapist.
Why, yes, I do.
Would you mind throwing good robot replicant Bryce under hypnosis? Maybe we can get something out of this.
Is this how you treated the real Bryce?
No. Hey. This kidder. So anyway, can you do it on the sly, like without him realizing?
Yeah. Hey, Bryce, what's that? All right, go. Do it now. Do it now.
Hey, Bryce.
Yeah.
Watch this air freshener. Tell me what color you think it is. It goes back and forth. Do you smell the scent of the pine forest and feel as if you're walking among them? Why don't you sit down and take a nap in the forest and look up into the sky? That'll be 75 cents with the freshener, by the way.
Oh, right on.
I had to open it up out of the package.
You still take flies in payment?
I was going to say, I shake the therapist's hand, but I palm him 4 flies. I say, keep the change.
I say, therapist, ask him whatever the right probing questions are, because you're the expert here.
Bryce, I want you to go way back into the forest, and you come across a clearing. And in that clearing, you see two people there. One is you. One is this sir, what's your name?
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, I'm Brian.
Brian. One's Brian in front of you. Oh. It's a conversation. It's the trees are starting to shake and rattle. What are the words that he is saying that are making this happen?
Oh, I remember. He said, "The bunker. Come to my bunker."
Come to your bunker. Interesting.
Bunker.
Do we want to explore the bunker? There's a cave up ahead. Let's go step inside the cave. Oh. There's a fire casting a glow on the walls. Just shadows. There's a shadow that looks like a Bryce shadow, and there's a shadow that looks like a Brian shadow. What are the shadows doing?
Well, they're gesturing. They're talking. They're angry.
Oh,
is one more angry than the other?
Oh yes, the Bryce shadow is way more angry.
Interesting. This has took a turn. Is there any violence here?
No, but it might be. The Brian is walking away?
All right. Okay.
Maybe.
Bryce, you're coming up. Oh, he's awake now. Sorry.
Hey, so anyway, like I always said, hypnosis is a fraud. We got to get back on the road. Thank you very much for the therapy and the window washing. Enjoy the flies. Hey, who wants jerky?
So you're back on the road. All what we know now guys? Is there was some sort of traumatic event that took place. We don't quite know what happened. Cells interlinked within cells interlinked. Blade Runner 2049 reference. I love this. Maybe it's nothing. Sometimes they're false memories. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they aren't. Anyhow, you're headed now. So what is your plan at this point?
Well, I mean, we got to get to Bryce Vegas no matter what, right, Justin? Right. I mean, whether we plan to assassinate.
Sure. Yeah, no. They're going to try and kill our families or whatever, but we're going to try and skim the information that they have. But push comes to shove. It is in our, it's our job right now to go to Bryce Vegas to compete in a pro wrestling event. And while we're there, we're going to try and Dave the real Bryce.
Yeah. And, okay, so I figure we'll get on over there. Do we want to, you know what? We got this nuke, and everyone's going to wonder why we're driving into town with the nuke. What if we make that part of our wrestling show?
On the side of it? Is that how people would notice? Because we got the big nuke van?
Well, no, okay, so here's what we do. First of all, I say we dress up this atomic bomb. We put some, like, what do you call those? Jacob's ladders and some Tesla coils and some pinwheels on it to make it look like a prop nuke. And we act like that's our gimmick. You know, magicians say if you want to hide it, paint it red. So we'll come into town and we're like, we're here to nuke Bryce Vegas.
Yeah. And because we're now we're going to change our names, and now we're Donnie Nuke and Jimmy Nuke.
Yeah,
the Nuke Brothers.
Yeah.
Nuke Brothers.
The Nuke Boys.
Couple of good old boys. Yeah.
The Nuke
All
dudes.
In nuclear arms, never meaning no harm.
Exactly.
And now we're you Nuke Boys, I'll get you next time.
And so, yeah, we're going to be them Nuke Boys, and we're gonna come in here to nuke. We're going to nuke Bryce Vegas. Perfect. I love it. All right.
Hey, boys, your manager here. Manager here. Listen. There has been – I've been sitting in the RV the whole time eating this delicious beef jerky. I've been on the radio set talking around, and there's a lot of excitement about, you know, the appearance of these two new wrestlers from Texas showing up in Las Vegas. A lot of excitement. Teensy little bit of bad press, though. Teensy bit of bad press. It seems that there was going to be, like, you know, some fan favorites were going to be, like, you know, in the opening of the card, and you set them on fire, you know. Anyhow. We need to build up.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, whatever. What do we need to build up?
We need to do a couple things to sort of build up, you know, the fan love for you. Well, I mean, get it from total wanting them to murder you to, like, at least, you know, maybe letting you set foot in Bryce Vegas. I got a plan. There's actually a children's hospital right up ahead on the right.
Okay.
Post-apocalyptic. The kids are kind of oozing a bit. You know, they're going to have green stuff coming there. But I got radio. On the radio, they said, hey, you know what? Why don't they go do an appearance there? Go shake some hands, shake some stumps, whatever. Say hello to the kiddies and sign some autographs and stuff. And word will get around. You know, the wrestling community, post-apocalyptic, really, it'll go over well.
This okay. would be good PR. You guys have had a good track record with doing good stuff?
Yep. No, okay. I agree.
Also, we got to hide fake Bryce.
Because otherwise
we got a luchador mask right here.
A luchador. Okay. That's right. That's great. Okay, so we got a luchador mask.
Or can we get like a scuba suit or something? You know, or maybe a mariachi outfit. Sunglasses. There perfect. You go.
Sunglasses.
He just puts a mustache, pencils in a mustache.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And from here on out, you're not Bryce. You're L Bryce Theo.
Actually, we call him Uncle Bryce Theo or Theo Bryce Theo.
Oh, yeah, Uncle Bryce Theo.
Theo Bryce Theo.
Theo Bryce.
This doesn't seem as
just Theo. Just Theo.
Yeah, we'll just call him Theo. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen, we've got a fun show for these kids. Let's go here. Let's go into the kids.
All right, you go into the ward. There are all these kids laying around. A lot of burn victims. A lot of burn victims.
And I say, hey, kids, who likes?
Doctor comes out covered in blood. Like, oh my god! Thankfully, some entertainment here. I had like a school bus of burn victim children come into me from here. I have no idea where they came from. Have you heard anything?
I've heard these kids are ready for a show. You kids ready for a show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, kids. He died cheering for you, Brian.
This little kid over here, Robbie, he died cheering for you, says one of the orderlies, just so you know.
Okay.
That should put a smile on your face because he died smiling. Well, he died choking after he smiled.
Let's have all right, kids, sit down and open
He's
up your
He's not
even
a patient. He was just a friend of one of the kids that's in here, so it's really kind of tragic.
We're going to tell a story about deferred consequences for your actions. Because every time you do something, it doesn't mean that you have a reaction immediately.
I go up to Brian. Do you want your fire-eating sticks now, or do you want them after this?
I was like, you know what? I don't think the fire-eating is going to play really well here with these burn victim kids. But I like the way you're thinking. Sure, okay, yeah. But I'll tell you what. See if you can find some rusted nails. I'll do the blockhead. Yeah, it'll be fine.
I'm sure a hospital has a lot of this.
Muchas gracias, Tio. kids, Brian will tell you, you know.
This show sucks.
What was that?
This show sucks.
hey, you want to know what else sucks? Life. But every once in a while, you can run away from it and complete your own objectives. Isn't that right, Brian?
Okay. We're going to tell a fun, interactive story. Let me get you, Johnny. Come over here. You're going to be our hero. And the hero has this plastic sword that I put in your hand. Now rattle your saber and say, I'm powerful.
I am powerful.
That's great. Okay, and now we need little Johnny goes out into the magical forest when he encounters a village of elders, and he needs help from the elders, but the elders don't give him what he wants, so he chops up the village. Now chop up the village with your plastic sword. Good
job. I'm chopping the village.
Okay, good.
Eat that, Grandma.
And then Johnny goes on to the next village, and he still needs some stuff. And the second village doesn't have what he wants. So what does he do?
Murder them all.
He chops up the village. Chop up the village. Chop,
Johnny, chop.
That's right. Okay, great. And then one day his sword broke. So he got a new sword. This one was called an atomic bomb. And he goes to the third city, the biggest city of them all. And he has things he wants, but he doesn't know if they're going to have it. What do you think is going to happen if the city doesn't give him what he wants?
I'm going to chop them with my nuclear bomb.
Hey, that's a good story with a good lesson we could all relate to.
You notice over in the corner, there is a very large patient, somebody under a sheet, and you can't see their face, but you're noticing somebody in the corner, a little suspicious.
Hey, by the way,
boom! He pops up with a gun. Greetings from Bryce Vegas, and starts shooting up the whole hospital ward. Clips good Bryce in the shoulder. He's firing on everybody, shooting everybody, shooting at children. He's trying to shoot at you guys, but you're using children as shields.
Ideal steel. I rev up my chainsaw hand and immediately dive at him, and I say,
"He's reloading. I'm gonna get you."
I dive at him, I said, "That was supposed to be a metaphor, you poor watcher of my story." And then I stab the chainsaw into him.
I run cover for Tio and try to drag him back to the vehicle.
Ayúdame. Blood spread. You will never make it to Bryce Vegas.
All right, I chop off his head, and then I hold up the head for the surviving children to see, and I say, "Who?"
The two surviving children.
I say to the two, I say, "Great magic trick or greatest magic trick?" And then I drop the head, and we run out to the car.
By the way, it was just the hotel staff and the kids. There was no like press or anything.
No, there was press, but they got killed.
They got killed. Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Real quick, I write in their notebooks, in best show ever, just on all of them, and then.
No, we also record ourselves with one of their cameras. And I say right into the camera, "We know what your argument was about before the apocalypse." So that gets back to Bryce. We know.
Oh yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
And good Bryce is there going, Bunker, why can't I stay?
Oh, shit. All right. Sorry. New take. Take two. We know what happened in the bunker.
Bryce is like, Brian kicked me out during the apocalypse. Had to survive on my own.
Take three. We know what you did to get kicked out of the bunker.
Forgot his favorite granola bar.
Leave it at take three. Take three is as best as we're going to get. Let's just leave that there, and we'll see if we can, is there any way that we can communicate with, like, is there any satellites or anything that we can, like, beam that to the news station or any of the press that's there? Can we communicate?
Good Price, like, check your phone. I think we get cell phone signal here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we upload to, we're doing like a little thing, like, look at what the goons of Bryce did to these poor children. burned them nearly alive, and then came to finish the job. This is the horror, but we know where it comes from. Bryce, meet us. Meet us at the border of Bryce Vegas, and we can bring an end to these hostilities because we know what happened in the bunker.
And then I popped my head in, and I was like, and then make sure to stick around for our awesome wrestling show. It's going to be a huge event.
Next time on Journey Quest. I feel sorry for people who just tune in.
Like, oh, my God. How confusing.
What is this idiotic thing?
You guys want to do picks?
Yeah, let's do picks.
I got a pick.
What you got?
Paddington 2 was delightful. What a great kids movie that adults had a lot of fun at. It's great. There's a reason it's got 100% Rotten Tomatoes in that it's generally unoffensive. But Hugh Grant was hilarious, and the setup on it was funny. Oftentimes, they have to get creative after the first kids movie and start adding wacky characters and stuff, so it gets a little sloppy. None of this. It was tight. It was just a separate adventure, and Paddington is the center of all that's right in the universe.
Sweet.
I am going to pick American Vandal.
Hey!
A bunch of people loved it. I watched it this weekend, and I burned through it, man. I went through it really, really quick. There's a moment in American Vandal which gets you in the door with the idea that this is Serial with a kind of the seriousness of Serial or Making a Murderer with a one-note joke of, you know, a high school prank. But the care and effort that is put into this internal universe is remarkable. I think that the characters that they draw are, even though, you know, I mean, they're juvenile, they're high school kids, but they're realistic and fun to the point where you wind up feeling bonded to them. But also, by the end of it, has this, like, very real moment that I don't want to spoil, but, like, said more about the actual experience that I had of being a journalist than any of, and I haven't seen The Post, but I'm assuming that it is another film in the well-worn genre of, you know, battle crises that have fit into newsrooms and bring the objective capital T truth by way of capital J journalism that involves a lot of hand slapping on desks and whiteboards. But this was a real kind of moment about what it means to stir up people's lives for finding a story, right? And I think that it was kind of amazing. I was continually impressed with not only the internal universe, but then eventually kind of the larger element that it was trying to say with, you know, I think the point they were making was like, what does it mean when people that aren't necessarily seasoned journalists wade into these waters? But I think it was kind of a larger commentary on just what it means to find things and make them public. So great, great, great job. American Vandal, I recommend it.
I don't want to spoil it, but is the moment you're talking about the thing that happens in the party at the very end?
Yeah, there's a conversation between two people at a party. Yeah. Yeah,
that was also, I think, the strongest moment for me, in that it really, like, gives the whole season sort of a moral on true crime sort of stories like that. I think you nailed it. And
I mean, and I guess that's the thing, is like, that's everything. I mean, I one time when I was editor-in-chief of the Daily Orange, I had to sit on the phone for an hour with a basketball player who was not happy about the fact that we were writing a very flattering story on him. Like, it was about his family and his upbringing and how hard he worked, and his mom willfully got on the phone and talked about, you know, how proud of her son she was and everything. It was fairly, when you read it, it was fairly unremarkable. He's a private guy, didn't want any of it out there, didn't want to talk about his mom, or didn't want his mom talking to the paper, wanted us to spike the story. And I literally just had to be on the phone for an hour while he called me all kinds of names and called the reporter all kinds of names because that's what the job is on some level. He cannot talk if he wants to, but if a lot of other people want to say nice things about him, that's what the audience wants to hear, right? And that's on a very, very small scale. But like those elements are real. And to me, they are far more real than these myths of the big story that, you know, with the conspiracies and, you know, finally speak truth to power. Like, those are cool. But by and large, they are these guiding myths that kind of journalists, I think, rely too much on. And certainly the mythology of journalism, I think, relies too much on where that moment and those moments in general, I think, are they're the fabric of actually doing that job.
Yeah, I'll watch it. Fine.
I spent like a half hour trying to talk Andrew into watching it.
Oh, really? I watched the first part. I'm like, yeah, it's clever. It's good.
To be honest, it reminds me a lot of trying to get people to do the Vive VR because you say, hey, have you done the Vive before? And they're like, no, but I've done, you know, I've seen 3D, whatever. You put on the goggles and they're 3D. And it's like, no, you got to do it. And then, and likewise, like, even just watching the beginning of American Vandal, you're like, yeah, I get it. It's going to be this one joke the entire time. And it's like, no. It's going to surprise you with depth and arcs and stories and a cast of characters that will become real in your mind, expertly written, expertly performed by kids. I mean, by young people. It's great.
Well, I mean, they're definitely like TV high school.
Correct. You know, correct.
So it's all like kids in their early 20s that are pretending to be 16.
I think Dylan in that show, the accused, is like a YouTuber.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
So Bryce, you have a pick?
I got a little pick. I started this today because I had seen a lot about it at conventions, and now it's out. It's called Gorogoa. Have you guys heard this at all? Maybe?
No.
I saw that at, what's it called, last year? I saw that at PAX South last year.
Yeah. It's a puzzle game that has this, like, comic pain visual aesthetic. So you just have these four squares where you can put these illustrations and you tap on them to go in and out and scroll around, and it's all done in this visual storytelling way of trying to do something with this dragon, and you're going in and out of all of these worlds. It's really cool, and I think as an adventure game that intentionally says, you know, that has no words and is trying to tell everything visually, it's really successful in that there is a lot of depth to it. The puzzles start off pretty easy because they're kind of showing you how the game works, but there really is a lot of internal logic that goes into the different story beats. And it's also just gorgeous. We're kind of seeing some of the illustrations now on the stream, but it's a really gorgeous game, and it works really well on touchscreen devices. So I think it's like $5 on iOS and then like 10 or 15 on PC and consoles, and it's on the Switch right now. So I think it's really cool, and if you like adventure games, check out Gorogoa.
Puzzle games, right?
Puzzle games. Yeah, it's kind of a mixture of, I guess puzzles probably more accurate. I see the two as similar, like classic adventure games. Yeah.
I love like Missionarium and some of those other like just straight up like do it at your leisure, investigate whatever kind of thing. So those, I look forward to this. I love that kind of thing. And there's a new, The Room, you know, the one with the box, you know, puzzle box one.
Yeah. The fourth, I think that's the fourth room.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Those are all real good games.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. My pick is a futile and stupid gesture.
Oh, that was recommended to me after I finished, Polka King.
Polka King, yeah.
Yeah, so Futile and Stupid Gesture is largely the story of Doug Kinney, who was one of the founders of National Lampoon. First was with Harvard Lampoon and then created National Lampoon with Beard and others and Hoffman. And there's they admittedly like have changed or, you know, condensed it to tell the story, but it's mainly about Doug Kenny. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. I enjoyed it. I knew nothing about the guy. And I liked going into it, not knowing anything about it and sort of the devices and things like that in which they were using to tell the story, which kind of made it even cooler. And there's a moment at the beginning, I'm like, I was very confused and I quickly forgot that I was confused. And then later on, I'm like, oh, okay, got it. Click on the director. Click on David Wayne's IMDb.
Oh, sure.
David Wayne, one of my favorites, man. David Wayne from the State, who has done so much stuff, including Wet Hot American Summer and everything past that. Role Models. He's amazing.
Yeah. So you've got somebody who has done a lot of really great comedy, who gets it, who's probably very connected to the stories in many ways. And National Lampoon was a phenomenon when it came out. And, you know, they make a point, and it's kind of really clear. It's like, you know, they wanted to do a radio show, so they got some very talented people, and they had John Belushi, Bill Murray, Brian Doyle Murray, Gilda Radner. And when, some Canadian carpetbagger decided to do it, they got approached by NBC to do a show, like a comedy show, and they're like, meh. And then some Canadian carpetbagger named Lauren Michaels decided to do one. And who did he hire? John Belushi, Bill Murray, Brian Doyle Murray, Gilda Radner, and the roots of SNL were in National Lampoon. In the live events, they did The Lemmings, which is the group that did. The Lemmings was this live show they did, which was presented kind of like as an apocalyptic Woodstock where everybody gathered together to kill themselves. And, you know, imagine John Belushi on stage as your kind of, you know, folk cult leader leading you into that as a piece of entertainment.
Right on.
That's my pick. So,
dude, that looks great. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, you get into, there's a documentary. There's also another documentary in National Lampoon that gets more into that. But anyhow, so that's my pick. So, anyhow. Gentlemen,
it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.